Yes, it's a meathead Cro-Magnon forehead Monday on the morning shift, Sports Radio 99 The Game. We got Mike Johnson, who chews with his mouth open. We have Squid, whose OnlyFans is free.
My wife reminds me as well.
We've got Day-Day, straight off his iconic role as Raj in What's Happening. Look that one up. And the always affable Dylon. And I'm Rob Tribble.
Rob Tribble, the professor.
No, he's not Professor Tribble today. He's just got a zip-up hoodie. That's too low class for a professor.
He's either
Doc Worker Tribble.
Doc Worker Tribble.
It's either no brand or it's Balenciaga, the way Deshaun Watson wore the coin toss. I don't know which one.
He's missing one of those beanies, like those Doc Worker beanies away from being.
Couldn't find it.
Seattle Fish Market. That's a good call.
Yeah, you're
that's
a loading dock guy today.
Loading dock guy today, man. Well, I wish Falcons had a little bit more of a blue-collar instinct than my blue-collar dock worker look today, gentlemen. I got to tell you, the most disheartening thing is you follow up that effort in New Orleans last week. And you think, okay, that's a one-off. They'll fix it. Clearly, there's a sense of urgency, and you're embarrassed after what happened against a depleted Saints team. And you go out yesterday, and it's worse. Much worse, no. Gentlemen.
Yeah, I actually... I heard people try to compare the Saints game to the Seattle game. This was the Seattle game type game.
You won the second half against the Saints.
You did. Yeah, I did. And you were just some missed opportunities away from winning that game. And then now you come out here to yesterday, and it was not quite the same. I was sitting there Friday afternoon when the injury report came out. And, Mike, I'm pretty sure I texted you.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to, maybe just kind of give a – you can't say the exact words.
I was going to say, should I look it up?
Yeah.
Something along the lines of, this ain't good.
I think I said we're blanked.
Yeah.
Or this blanking sucks, because I knew as soon as I saw the injury report that we were in trouble.
Sure.
Because we were down, being down two of your best players in the secondary when you don't have a vibrant pass rush – means you're in trouble, especially with one of the best game day coaches, I think, in the NFL, and that's Sean Payton, because he's calling plays, he's going through it all, and, he has our number, and when he gets us and he gets us in a vulnerable spot, he wants to take advantage of it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And look, I that's where I'm at, and I tweeted this out yesterday kind of during the second half. Two things are true at the same time. Falcons definitely hurt by injuries. And at the same time, there is zero reason for the Falcons to ever be beat as badly as they were yesterday. And I mean zero. That was the Broncos' best win in 6 years. Put that into perspective. Their best win in 6 years. It was hard to stomach, man, from top to bottom. And we'll have to get into it throughout the show, because you mentioned it. Why is it that everybody in the NFL can run screen passes against us, and we can't run a screen pass? I've yet to figure out why.
You would
we're
think
not
with
good at
our
screens.
Personnel, that would be one of the strengths of the offense, having that in your
it should be
in your holster.
It should be. That's an off. Like, if you talk to offensive linemen who are sick of getting pass rushed, they will almost always say, "Hey, we need to run more screens." Well, that way, you keep the defense off balance. Yet, it doesn't work for us. So I don't even blame Zach Robbins.
I don't think I have all the answers, but I'll tell you one thing that kills us on both sides of that spectrum is offensively. We have defenders come up and they play up tight on us, and they get hands on our receivers right at the line of scrimmage, and they keep us from our receivers, I should say, from creating separation. And I think the last 2 weeks you've seen two teams that are extremely willing to come up, hug receivers, and disrupt routes. On the other side, we go back and go back and look. And, Mike, I think you might be watching the game right now as we speak. Go back and watch some of the screen plays that they scored touchdowns on.
Yeah.
Hell, we're 10 yards off the ball. And what happens, Rob, is, especially inside that at red area, it creates a wall. And if you can't cut and penetrate that wall.
A wall, a nice escort to the end zone.
Well, yeah. And I'll tell you what our defense and Jimmy Lake's defense, Raheem Morris, what they rely on in those situations is pursuit from our edge players and our linebackers. And the effort, simply put, the effort that we're getting out of certain edge guys isn't good enough to stop a screen, because they're not redirecting. They look lazy. They look uninspired. And I think that a lot of that, what I was watching out of the edge position last night, led to what Raheem Morris's postgame comments were about effort, about being ready. And I actually loved what Raheem said. I know we'll hear it, you know, probably throughout the show, but I loved what Raheem's postgame was. And because, you know, Dave does the right thing and he says, hey, well, you guys, you know, have had some injuries. And Raheem says, nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares, dude. Nobody cares. It looked no further than New Orleans a week ago that came in here decimated in the secondary and having a head coach fired, and yet we're able to play a better brand of football than the Falcons did on Sunday.
Yeah, they're now 2-0, by the way. I thought it was a good point that you just brought up. I thought it was a better statement that Kirk Cousins said when kind of talked about the struggles of the offense and the team overall. And he said, well, we need to go in meetings and ask the questions that get things fixed. And they need to actually get them fixed. Instead of just talking about it, we need to actually fix it. And his blunt honesty is, you know, that's what you expect from a, 14-year veteran or whatever he is now? 12-year veteran? Hell, I don't know. I have to look it up. But I know the guy's played a lot of games, and I think he started around 170-something games, and he definitely knows what leadership is.
Well, and we'll talk about this before we get to break real quick. I'm curious from your perspective, or both of y'all's perspectives, who do you think Kirk is talking to most? Who do you think he's talking to most when he says something like, hey, we need to go in and ask the question to get things fixed? Because to me, I think you look at it and you say, well, he's talking to his teammates and they need to be in the right position. I don't think he's just talking to Zach Robinson, but I think there's some Zach Robinson probably mixed in there. Because I think that Kirk believes in his mobility probably more than Zach Robinson does. And, dude, Kirk wasn't moved off the spot at all by design yesterday. Not at all. And I realize that there's a lack of mobility. Doesn't mean you can't run a little half boots.
It doesn't mean you can't move laterally a little bit. He's not 80 years old in a nursing home.
We talk about play action pass. We talk about going under center. We talk about doing all these things, and yet we have the most vanilla of game plans. Our game plan, when you look at throwing wrinkles in there, is screen passes. That's our wrinkle. There's no, you know, misdirection, reverse, the things like that. There's none of that. And so it's frustrating to watch because we feel like a one-trick pony on offense.
You talk about how many games Kirk Cousins has played, 156 career games, first time in his entire career, back-to-back weeks without a touchdown pass.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's...
Oh, dude, that's...
They've gotten the red area. I saw somebody, I think it might have been, I can't remember who it was, somebody tweeted it, and it was like they've been in the red area. And seven or eight times in the last two games, and they got one touchdown. Yeah. And that was Bijan's touchdown on fourth and one, mind you. I text you after that first drive and said the exact same thing they did last year. You get down there, you actually scored a touchdown, holding call, 10 yards back. Then immediately you get a false start. No, it wasn't a false start. It was an illegal motion because Drake London's
that was
moving
on Drake, yeah.
slightly forward. And it would have been a first and goal because they got the ball back down to, like, I think, the 2-yard line on that catch.
Well, the prior play with Bijan, same thing. Or was that after the Bergeron hole?
Yeah, the Bergeron hole was on the Bijan touchdown. That would have been a touchdown, I think. Or he would have been right there.
I think it would have
been
on the one, but yeah. First and goal or a touchdown. Yeah, because he hit the pylon.
And it's 2 weeks in a row you've gotten down there in that area, Rob, and you had back-to-back penalties that pushed it back 15 yards.
How many times have we seen that over the years? It seems like it's such a constant.
Dude, how many times have you just seen it this year?
Yep.
It has been a
constant.
Bad. That is the stuff to me. I know we can talk about the vanilla stuff, and Mike, I don't disagree with any of that. You and I have looked over a lot of stuff film-wise together, but it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you just keep shooting yourself right in the foot, and they're not even shooting it with a 22, they got the daggum 12-gauge out, just blowing their foot off at times.
All right, coming
probably
up next.
Bad analogy, but sorry.
Coming up next, he's like herpes. He's back and terrorizing the NFC South.
Rob Tribble?
Oh, no. Walking fever blister that he is. It's the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 99 The Game.
Self-inflicted wounds early. We got to go back and reflect on ourselves, get our stuff right first. We got to go back and get healthy. We got to go into this bye, do everything we can to come back and be as healthy as possibly so we can play our best football.
All right, Rob. Sure, you said all the right things. Gentlemen, I got to ask you.
Hit me with
this. This is a Morning Shift, by the way.
Ding.
Does Raheem Morris have the gravitas to be a successful NFL coach? That stern seriousness that's needed, level of accountability, is it a too much of a buddy-buddy thing? Is that too simplistic? I don't know. I'm just looking for answers.
I think it's a fine line. I think it's a fine line. I think that you can be buddy-buddy.
You don't
want to
be Tom Coughlin.
Well, I think you can be buddy-buddy, and you have to be more buddy-buddy in this day and age. I don't think Tom Coughlins exist anymore.
They don't last very long.
Right. But I also think that you have to be stern in what you're asking for. I think Dan Campbell is actually a perfect example of this. Like, he's buddy-buddy, and they believe in him, but at the same time, he's like, dude, we got to go to work.
Yeah, yep. That's a great comparison. Yep.
And I believe that – I believe Ra is. I believe he – I
agree. I still believe in Ra.
I have seen even when he was, coaching wide receivers back during the Super Bowl run, and he was on the staff during that time, I know. And I also believe in it because of what happened when he took over as interim. And, you know, guys can crap on this all they want, but he took over, 0-6, I think, or 0-5, and he immediately fired Ben Kawicka, who I think was across the sideline yesterday as a special teams coach for Sean Payton, who I ran into Sean Payton.
Did you dap him up?
No.
Did you physically run into him?
Almost. He yielded to me.
Oh, okay. You were like, excuse me, sir.
Well, we were walking, well, we had to
you
walk.
You backed him down, huh?
Well, when we were walking through with the coaches, getting to the locker room post game, we had to intersect, and I stopped for a Denver offensive lineman, and then I started to walk again, and then there was Peyton was stopped coming, and we were about to intersect.
Yeah,
and he yielded.
There you go, boy. I'm sure.
I was talking about was the fever blister. Sean Payton now still wreaking havoc on the NFC South. 4-0 against the division, all victories by double digits.
I thought you were talking about Taysom Hill after he broke off for about 150 rushing yesterday.
Three touchdowns, too.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were going with the fever blister that is.
I thought it was going to be the revenge game, but 35-14, Saints beat the Browns in three touchdowns for Taysom.
Here's the next question I have, too. I don't feel this way, but I know there's a pocket of Falcons fans that do that feel that we're in a worse spot right now than we would have been under Arthur Smith a year ago. Which I don't believe, but I know that there's people that have said that to me, going, hey, Arthur Smith never lost games this bad.
Really? Did they not watch the last two games of last season?
That's the answer right there.
In 2021 against Dallas, where we got boat raced?
To the defense of that, though, those games at the end of the season felt meaningless, felt lost. This was like a game you needed to go get.
In 2021, we went to Dallas and lost like 43-3 or
43
something.
43-3.
So I don't want to hear that.
That's the worst. This is the worst loss since then?
Yeah.
Has to be, right?
Has to be. I don't know.
I don't remember what that final was against New Orleans last year. Was it 42-17?
It was bad.
Something like that.
The game in Chicago was equally as bad.
The worst loss in franchise history for the Falcons? 59-0 1976 to the Rams.
That's brutal.
59-0. Holy smokes.
Yeah. And I don't. First off, the statement's false. And second off, I'm not worried about what happened when Arthur Smith was there. I'm trying to worry about what's wrong with this team.
Well, I'm not either. He asked the question, does Raheem have the gravitas to be able to get this done, which I still believe he does. But
believe he does. I'm not sure.
I will say this, and I don't remember who wrote this, but the walkthrough Wednesday thing, and I know that that's to get you to help.
D-Led tweeted about that.
Maybe I saw somebody responding to D-Led. I'm a little bit weary of what that is and what standard you're setting when you do that. And look, you can't just be gritty throughout 18 weeks of practice or whatever it is. But, man, it's something's got to change that you did wrong the last couple weeks. Just to put it that way.
I hope that was I looked at that and kind of tended to think, okay, you have a late bye. You got guys banged up. Yep. And you're trying to kind of get them to the bye week without risking anything else because we know – Have guys gotten re-injured stuff or aggravated stuff and during practices, even if you're not going to the ground. That's kind of what I was looking at as. I would like to think that won't be a thing there after this week off that the team's going to have to get healed up. I mean, I thought your tweet was phenomenal. They're banged up. But you still shouldn't have lost the game the way you did. And I think they need to look in the mirror, especially, and you'll talk about the offensive side, but really especially on the defensive side about how they are playing teams. And I just think sitting back 7 to 8 yards off the ball and not coming up and challenging, because at this point, now teams are busting big plays on you the last 2 weeks. No matter what. I mean, we've seen multiple big plays. So, right. I think it's time to just throw the scrap the let's play 10 yards off the ball and figure this thing out because it's not working. It's just not working. Would you rather get paper cut to death? Because the reality of that situation is they're still going down and scoring and are also keeping the ball for 8 minutes at a time.
I think that scheme can work if you had anybody up front that could win a one-on-one.
That's the thing. Isn't that predicated? That scheme is predicated on being able to get pressure.
Well, and I think you kind of back Jimmy Lake into a corner almost because it doesn't matter what you do in coverage. It feels like given 5-6 seconds that the quarterback seemingly always has from the other team, they'll be able to find somebody. And also, and this is why I keep faulting back to Zach over Jimmy Lake, and I appreciate the fact that Jimmy Lake is a lot of people upset with him. We have, what, 6 or 7 first-round draft picks on offense? Like when you count the 3 offensive linemen that come along with that? A number of second round, like you are loaded with talent on offense. You have guys that should be able to get it done. Jimmy Lake on defense has made guys into players that wouldn't have been otherwise. The D Alfords, the Mike Hughes, the other guys, the Caden Ellises of the world that he's done a pretty good job with. I don't think he's playing with the full deck, and if he was, I think he would do things differently. But we just have to have
personnel
somebody.
Personnel just dictates scheme.
You have to have somebody that can win a one-on-one matchup. We don't have anybody up front.
I would push back a little bit that the linebacker play is nowhere near the level it was last year under a different scheme.
Oh, I agree.
So whatever, maybe go and find whatever he our guy's name that was able to do it last year, the DC from last year.
You don't want him? I don't know if you watched that game.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is go watch film at how he used Lamon and Ellis and how they were effective last year. And I know there's different personnel. You don't have Calais Campbell, and you don't have
Bud Dupree.
God, he went off last night.
But I know you don't have those guys, but kind of go back and look at the way they were used because the defense was a lot more effective last year. And granted, different players in some roles, but the linebacking core especially.
Schematically different as well. And that's I have people that are like, hey, we should have brought Calais Campbell back. He had 6.5 sacks. Calais Campbell doesn't play in the scheme we have. It's one of the reasons you haven't seen Zach Harrison very much, right? It just doesn't fit. Calais is one of those guys that came in because he knew he'd be able to play – on tight ends, they'd slide him in a little bit. He'd shift around a little bit. And I think that Caden Ellis was much more apt to be a good linebacker in that scheme because he didn't get attacked. He didn't get attacked as easily by offensive linemen. Caden Ellis is just not built for that. He's built to be one of those guys in a 4-3 that scrapes over the top and can play off the edge.
What interesting to see yesterday that Sean Ellis, Caden Ellis' brother, got a sack.
Rob, you weren't here last week. I talked about all the rookie draft picks that play edge and what their stats were, and he was one of the guys I brought up, and I think that's he would be leading our team in sacks right now, I think.
Yeah. By a half a sack.
Yeah.
Because Judon did, if you go back, and he did get a sack yesterday.
He had a good rep.
Well,
I
text Mike, and I said, I need something from 15 right here. And literally the next play, he shoved McGlinchey. He ended Nick's. It's what knocked Nick's down.
Yeah.
So I was glad
stepped on Nick's ankle.
Yeah.
That was the best rep I think he's had all year.
Yeah. That was, and he had another good tackle on a little outlet pass or a run play or something later in the game. I'd give Bo Nix credit, man. He played well.
There was one play where he extended the play. He got loose and was scrambling about. Then he just threw a beautiful, just parachuted it into the receiver. That one particular play is like, wow, he's a lot better than I thought he was going to be.
I think it was it the third down on the first drive where
this was later in the ball game. Okay, it was like, wow, that's impressive.
It's all blur to me.
He had a play on the first third down of the game, and it happened to be where. I think it was Kevin King lost where he was in coverage, and him and his receiver basically knocked Justin Simmons down. That was the receiver.
Oh, right.
I think it was might have been Judy that got open, or Sutton. No, it wasn't Judy. Hell, he's gone.
Yeah,
I think it was Cortland Sutton.
Yeah.
And Nick's improvised ran up and made the throw. And that's the things that. You don't think about you had at one point Richie Grant trying to play nickel.
I didn't understand that.
Well,
you made the adjustment at halftime, and you came back out in the second half, and Natron Bruce.
Well, that's where he was
from
that personal foul penalty, which really wasn't.
Well, that was garbage. Foul. Well,
the one on D'Angelo Malone was the most ridiculous thing.
Yeah, I those. Well, let me tell you. Look, I'm not Not going to blame the refs today because that was the least of our worries.
Absolutely not.
But I will tell you, how in the hell that was a catch that Courtland Sutton made where he fumbled it immediately and then fell on, and they gave him the first down on a fourth down play that when the ball game was, 21-6? That wasn't a fumble in the Georgia game, but apparently it was in this game. And the fact that they reviewed that, again, that was not why we lost the game, but I needed to get that one off my chest because that's garbage from the NFL.
All right, coming back. Georgia's played more ranked teams than Oregon, Penn State, Miami, Texas, and Indiana combined. Going to get into that big Bulldog victory on Saturday night. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Let's go on campus next. Sports Radio 99 again.
Play clock down at 5. Beck. Flushed. The takeoff. Person Beck with a flag out. Scores. Standing up.
Welcome back to the morning shift. Triple in for Tiffany. Sports Radio 929 the game. More on the Falcons. Top of the hour. David Archer caught up with Kirk Cousins. We'll do that mandatory segment. Top of the hour. And we're going to take your calls, too. At 404-726-0929. We're going to gauge the temperature of the fan base, although we're going to take your temperature. It's not going to be oral, unfortunately. We're going to have to do it the other way, but we're doctors. We know best. So there you have it.
I did say to Weston over the weekend, so that automatically makes me a better person, right?
I don't even know what to say to y'all.
How about can we talk about something that, Rob, I know you weren't here, but I know you were listening because you never miss a single second of the morning shift.
Never, ever.
No. But we were talking about Georgia last week, and I brought it up to Rusty. Is like, and we can blame Carson Beck all we want. They're not good offensively up front. They're not good at the running back position.
They're not mauling people on the O-line like they used to.
No. And I said, and where were these – 5-star tight ends that Oscar Depp and Lawson Lucky that were just supposed to take over for Brock Bowers. And how about Oscar Depp? Boy, what a game for him.
Two touchdown catches, yep, for Bradley Delp. I always call him Bradley Delp. That's the lead singer of Boston that killed himself.
That's well, not good. Thanks for bringing, you know. Thanks for bringing that in.
Putting it in context.
I did love that. That first Boston album is one of the best albums of all time. Yep. Phenomenal.
Let's keep the main thing the main thing.
But the tight ends got involved, and Oscar Depp had a couple of big plays. 4 catches, 50-something yards, and a couple of touchdowns. So
it's such a weird game to try to dissect. And let me stop by saying the Georgia offensive line wholly rise up to the occasion. Goodness. Shuffling around. Different faces, different places. You're going against a Tennessee defense that had not given up more than 19 points all season. And you also didn't have an efficient run game. And yet you were able to pass pro a group that can absolutely get after the passer with the best defensive lines in the country. And you played lockdown up front for this offensive line. So it was a beautiful thing to be able to watch that group go to work. And Carson Beck avoids the turnovers. And poof, there you have it. Magic happens on the field.
It's Georgia's. I thought the game against Ole Miss was a clunker for Georgia. If you're ever going to see one from Georgia, right? Now give Ole Miss credit because they're getting paid to play as well. In today's college football game, it's weird to say that, but you teased it, and I want you to get to your tease. But does college football have a problem with the super conference era and the scheduling?
Oh, I think so. What incentive is there to play a tough schedule? Look at this. As far as strength of schedules go, Penn State 33, Indiana 76, Oregon 46, Ohio State 58, Texas 47, Notre Dame 66. And what, Texas finally had a road game where they had to go to Arkansas, right?
Well,
I mean, that's what it feels like.
Don't count out Vandy. They struggled at Vandy earlier in the year. Yeah.
So UGA has already played 5 opponents that were ranked in the top 25.
Well, they have the toughest strength of schedule in the top 25.
Yeah, but they've already played 5 at time of playing them.
3 of those on the road,
yeah,
I believe.
Florida has already played 5, and they'll play a 6th this weekend of when they're ranked. Now, that's not even counting the fact that Texas A&M was unranked when they played them, and they've since been in the top 10 for half the year, right?
Yeah,
so if you want to count them, that would be 6 about to play 7. You've got two teams right there, Florida and Georgia, who have played head and shoulders the toughest not only schedules in the SEC, but in college football history.
Yeah. Penn State's played one good team and lost.
Yeah, and they're going to make the college football playoff. And you've got BYU, who's beaten some decent teams out there in the Big 12 who just lost, and they could be in jeopardy of it, even if they win the conference.
The interesting part of what you're saying is, and let me dissect this real quick, there is a lot of Alabama fans, obviously Bama rolls against Mercer over the weekend, a lot of Alabama fans that are coming to the realization that they might backdoor the SEC title game because of their strength of schedule in the conference. And that is going to make that a possible make or break game to get into the college football playoff. Meanwhile, Georgia, and kudos to them, they could be in a point where they're hosting a playoff game. And I think that is awesome. You could possibly be a Bama team because of the schedule you've played, which really hinges on the success of Missouri in the last couple of weeks, shockingly. That you know could be in a situation where they have to go win the SEC title game or suffer a third loss and be out altogether.
Okay, well, let me the great fly in the ointment. Does Notre Dame deserve to be anywhere in the playoff? Because they beat their golden goose is Texas A&M as far as wins,
and that was on the road too.
But that was on the road. It was the first week of the season. But then they have the worst loss of any team in the college football playoff, which is Northern Illinois. And other than that, their best win would be who? Louisville?
Well, it's going to have to be this weekend.
Georgia Tech?
It's going to have to be this weekend.
Well, it's going to be this weekend. But see, here's the problem for me. They beat an Army team who I think on paper they should beat 10 out of 10 times. And some think they might lose. It is Notre Dame. But then they finish with a USC team who's benched their starting quarterback from the beginning of the year, and they're going to sit at home and not have to worry about a damn thing playing one of the what's their schedule rank?
Yeah,
be high.
Can we talk real quick before we go to break about the AP poll yesterday? The AP poll comes out. You got Oregon who barely escaped with a win against Wisconsin, Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Indiana, Notre Dame at 6. But then it gets and we knew this was coming. The SEC chaos. You got 7 Alabama, 8 Georgia, 9 Ole Miss, 10 Tennessee. And we knew that somebody was going to be mad. I didn't expect Ole Miss to be right behind Georgia 2 weeks removed from that game.
Yeah, I don't like
Tennessee
that.
Tennessee being 4 places behind Alabama after beating them earlier in the season is got to be tough to swallow as well.
Some
recency bias there for sure.
See, that one to me is kind of a product of it. I don't see how any way, shape, or form you can have Georgia ahead of Ole Miss.
You could make everybody happy, but that's the big head scratcher for sure.
Well, you got to incentivize tougher schedules and maybe do away with conference championship games. That's actually kind of a punishment, man.
That's never happening.
No, like I said,
of course not. No, it's a cash cow.
The good news for those teams, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Tennessee, whatever it may be, is that they right now won't have to play an SEC title game.
I'm a firm believer, and if you make your title game and you're in the top 12 of the playoff,
you're in
going
win or
in,
lose.
You should be in win or lose. I don't care if you're playing on the road the next weekend, but you should be in.
We're gonna take your calls coming back 404-726-0929. Get your feelings on the Falcons or trajectory of this franchise, which doesn't look very good right now. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. And also, we're going to hear from Kirk Cousins next. Sports Radio, 1990 The Game.